and a sure success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand, divided we fall.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly broadcasting around the world live from the future. Will, what was it? The Muslim Brotherhood and all this kind of fear-mongering is starting up, but they were founded and funded and protected and helped to be run by the friggin' CIA in there in the Arab region to promote a little destabilizing effect so that everybody will be freaked out about radical Islam so that they can introduce their police state measures here, wherever here may be.
Well, yeah, I mean, the CIA has been, you know, instrumental in the entire region since their founding, you know, and you know, especially since 1953 in Iran. With Mohammad Mossadegh there, but I mean, of course, it's a coup. The same people who are in control during Mubarak's time are still in control now, and so I guess it's a different face of them. Are they happy now?
Well, it says
300 people are dead. I mean, are they happy now?
No, they'll never be happy with just 300. It says in World Bank IMF documents that one of the things that they do after they get the country monstrously in debt and so that it's all in servitude and in poverty-like, then they stage revolutions so that it will further devalue the country so that they can come in and buy up its assets for pennies on the dollar. So it's like
a thing.
One-step, two-step program.
And that's the thing. All the socialists and anarchists and so on, types who are in support of that sort of action, you know, this revolutionary action, supposedly, and are in support of the people, do the people protesting really understand how the banking system, how the banking cartels work in this world? You know what I mean? Like how they enslave their country? Because if they did, perhaps they wouldn't have embarked on this whole effort to overthrow a single figurehead.
Well, yeah, and that's the difficulty dealing with these types of situations is that you won't get any decent information from mainstream media. I mean, sure, they'll tell you about what's happening, but they won't tell you the how or the why to any great effect. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 402-237-2525. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned, they like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. We have a guest that is borderlining on fabulous for you today, ladies and gentlemen, and it is my esteemed pleasure, honour, and various other very nice positive adjectives to welcome to the show Brian O'Leary, who is a former astronaut. Brian, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Well, hello. Glad to be speaking to you from also down under, but in South America. So,
oh, yeah. We're all in the nice southern atmospheric swing of the HAARP facilities. Now, one thing I really wanted to... it's the lighter side of genocide on this show. And I'd love it if you could actually give us a bit of a backgrounder on yourself. I mean, we know you're an ex-astronaut, but other than that, scant.
Well... It's a long lifetime. I'm well into retirement age in my 70s and living in Ecuador, and my wife Meredith and I have founded a conference center, a beautiful place called Motos Sueños. And so that's what we're doing now. But my activism, which has been going on now for 30, 40 years, and by the way, all those in-between years, when I was appointed to go to Mars, and back in 1967, when it was still in NASA's program plan, and then it was canceled because of the war in Vietnam. So at that point, when I was 27 years old and a fresh young PhD from Berkeley, I got a professorship at Cornell University. And at that point, I became a war protester as well, and I have been ever since. So it's been many years of history of objecting to the way things are. I am more than ever objecting to the way things are, and I'm also an advocate about many of the things that could be that lie outside the box of normal perception, such as the generation of so-called free energy or clean breakthrough energy, which has been suppressed for a very, very long time. Well, I think it's time now to move forward with it in spite of all of the suppression.
Well, yeah, and this is the interesting thing. A lot of people, they talk about, you know, peak oil and, oh, where we're going to get our energy from. And it's like, well, for F's sake, it's right there. It's been there since the days of Nikola Tesla. And the scumbags in charge just don't want it released because it threatens their monopoly and dictate on the development of society, basically.
Well, that's absolutely true. So you are aware of this, Vinny, and that's good. Not that many people are aware of it. And the thing that I find the most, let's say, shocking or surprising is the fact that many people that call themselves Greens, political progressives, and mainstream scientists who are all saying, hey, the Earth is getting destroyed. We're throwing so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. We're going to have climate change, blah, 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 blah. But none of them come up with any kind of meaningful solution. So I've been addressing that question in a lot of my writings recently, my most recent book, and a number of articles. I just published one in Infinite Energy magazine. It just astounds me that people are unwilling to look at the possibility, with proper research and development and teamwork, that we could have an energy solution revolution in the very near future.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the key is paramount to that is simply lifting the suppression of current devices that have already been invented. There was a guy in Christchurch, I believe, who came up with a closed circuit water fueled car. So, you know, I thought that was a very, very interesting thing. You know, for some reason, after he applied to the patent office for it, some big black SUVs turned up outside his house and started watching him. And then he started finding bugs on his car and all of this other kind of stuff. And it's like, it's actually really quite amazing. If you develop a piece of technology that threatens the very establishment that we come to know and love, well, mate, you're going to get some repercussions.
Absolutely. And there is really quite a litany of suppression stories, which those of you that really are interested in that aspect of things, there are several websites, and there's a lot of information out there about the huge number of suppression cases there have been, ranging from brutal assassinations to threats to bribes, or as you say, somebody with black SUVs bugging you and encouraging you not to do the work anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the problematic difficulty with it. I mean, if a industry had to keep itself alive via violent means, it is not an industry that is going to be existing in any way, shape, or form for the benefit of humanity, in my opinion. Because, well, if it was for the benefit of humanity, hey, they'd be doing everything out in the open, out in the light, like a decent charitable organization. And I can't name any off the top of my head because a lot of them are all controlled left-right paradigm pieces of crap anyway.
Yeah, I know. And it's just what's really sad is if you look at alternative energy sources and you just decide to stay inside the box, each one of them has its problems, even though in this world of corporate promotional bias, you get the impression that, hey, this thing coming along is the best thing since sliced bread. Well, when you actually analyze each one, as I've done through the years, you find that it's just none of them are really up to snuff. Biofuels, that's a big problem, especially the palm oil plantations and ethanol from corn and GMO crops and monoculture and the fact that it's stealing food from hungry mouths and that you need a fossil fuel infrastructure anyway to transport it, that doesn't seem to work. Even solar and wind, which is, you'd think would be the answer, but if you were to have a global energy system based on purely solar and wind power, you would have to use up so many materials. You'd be excavating mines everywhere just to build enough solar collectors and wind power stations to be able to generate enough electricity. So each one of them has its problems. Now, the possibility of breakthrough clean energy is very good. There are many, many, many technologies out there, many inventors who've been divided and ruled ever since the time of Nikola Tesla. And they're all, if one were to sanction that possibility, which I would encourage those of you in the Green Movement to give it a look, because most people in the Green Movement are not even aware of that possibility or might be afraid to some degree justifiably that it could be abused or put into military hands or that sort of thing. Well, hopefully these popular uprisings that are going on now just about everywhere will be the first catalytic events that will cause people to now become more curious about what we can really do in our future.
Yeah. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, I mean, we talk about this all the time in the Popular Green Movement. They seem to be completely, completely and utterly focused on this whole climate change dichotomy, I suppose it's become, and to the point where they feel somehow if we had a stable temperature that we can engineer, that we're just so powerful, we can engineer a stable temperature regardless of what the sun's doing or any of the classified technology is doing. Then all our problems would be solved somehow.
Right.
And that's danger. I mean, they're just so tunnel visioned.
Very tunnel visioned. And engineering the temperature implies to me geoengineering, which is being given serious consideration. And of course, that's another interesting controversy because obviously you're familiar with chemtrails and the fact that they have not at all been acknowledged by any of the political leaders, media, or scientific community mainstream. And even though geoengineering in a speculative realm and a calculation realm has been studied by scientists, there are a number of people that have thought that this would be a great idea. In other words, spew particles into the Earth's atmosphere to screen out sunlight to offset the effects of global warming. But that's a highly dangerous proposition for a number of reasons. One is that the particles that you spew into the atmosphere drop out of the atmosphere usually in a matter of days or weeks, whereas the carbon dioxide that's being pumped into the atmosphere now will remain for about 100 years. So there are a number of different considerations here. I almost, in many ways, I don't care how people come out of specific debates. What I'm more interested in is to ask the question, well, what's possible? What can we do to short-circuit this process? And if we need, I mean, the digging of fossil fuels and the burning of them is the most ridiculously insane way of producing energy that I know of, besides possibly nuclear power. And I'm glad you and New Zealand are in a nuclear-free zone. It's bad for your health. And the fossil fuels, likewise, you know, right here in Ecuador, where I live, 80% of the Amazon jungle here is being earmarked for oil drilling, which would totally wreck the environment. And yet they're planning to go ahead and do it for short-term money. And this is symptomatic of what's going on, of course, all over the world.
One of the annoying things that I find about these oil companies is that they purposely pollute wholesale because to dispose of their waste and things like that properly in a proper way is a bit expensive. So they then pollute entire ecosystems.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, of course, what would happen with this geoengineering option, because it's not only a ridiculous idea, but it also the spewing of particles in the atmosphere, which is really happening observationally but denied, is possibly polluting chemically of the environment where people are getting sick. And so when you see that and when you see what BP is doing in the Gulf, the fact that Chevron, Texaco, there was a recent lawsuit that was a judgment was issued that Chevron, Texaco has to pay up $8 billion to aggrieved indigenous and poor people in various communities around where they carelessly dumped toxic waste that got into the groundwater that ended up killing thousands of people because of the pollution of the water supply. And so on and on and on this goes. It's everywhere. And we seem to get the news piecemeal. It all depends on what's going on at the time. But people tend to forget, integrating over time, just the horrendous job we're doing on our planet and how that's going to have to change very quickly.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the central point, doesn't it, Brian, that we live in a controlled world. And, you know, from your time at NASA, can you speak to any of the insights you had into that control? I mean, we know.
I was in NASA only briefly because of the war in Vietnam. They canceled the Mars program, so I quit the program. And that was way back in the 60s. And I have to admit that back in the 60s, at least my point of view, I was sort of a gung-ho Eagle Scout PhD budding young astronaut. And although I didn't ever think America right or wrong, I was still moderately patriotic in those years until we got involved in Vietnam. And then that really changed me. And I became more and more aware of the control, the cover-ups. I became aware of NASA cover-ups, like of the face on Mars and some odd objects on Mars that suggest that maybe they're that they're artifacts that were constructed. Well, those kinds of pieces of evidence have been covered up and deliberately doctored to make it not look like a face. And so that, plus many, many other things, I know our friend John Eisen, hi, John, is aware of many, many of the cover-ups that are going on. And it's something that that's got to end. Otherwise, well, I'm living here in Ecuador and doing what I can to help awaken people, to ask people to pursue the knowledge that needs to be pursued, to reach inside and to and not be so distracted, and to look at what really is possible, which is really quite exciting and positive, and to insist that that be developed, whether it's free energy, whether it's the purification of water through various wonderful restructuring technologies that are not known by the mainstream, scientific community. And but it's an uphill battle because people deny the possibility of these things and don't even want to look at it. A wonderful analogy were the early days of aviation when the Wright brothers first flew in 1903. The reporter that covered that flight was fired from his position because the editor didn't believe that heavier-than-air flight was possible. And then 2 years later, Scientific American ran an editorial saying that aviation was a fraud, even though the Wrights had flown many times, many thousands of eyewitnesses of their flights.
Now, one thing I wanted to get into specifically after the coming break was what specific free energy technologies are you referring to? Because what we talk about suppression syndromes, and ladies and gentlemen, if you go to the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com and scroll down on the homepage there, you can purchase a copy of Jonathan Eisen's book, what was it? Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries, where he does in fact document many cases of this. And this is medical discoveries that have been suppressed, technological discoveries that have been suppressed. And basically, it seems to draw a pattern here, doesn't it? Anything that would really make humanity very, very free in a very simple and easy fashion. Oh, can't have that.
That's right. Yeah. By the way, I have a chapter in that book, a short chapter of suppressed inventions, at least the first edition, and very, very familiar with the articles in there. It's a very good book. There's also my book, The Energy Solution Revolution, which is on my website.
All right. Brian Leary is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, The Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. And we'll be right back after the break. Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, we've got some fabulous archives there with all the amazing guests that we have had on the show. And today, we've got one more for you. It's Brian O'Leary coming at us from technically down under in South America. Brian, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Now, let's get into this. Specifically, what kind of free energy technologies are you an advocate of?
Well, I'm an advocate of all of them if they're clean and they're cheap and can be decentralized. And there are many, many, many possibilities, and any one or some of which could do the trick. So there's the so-called zero-point energy. Sometimes it's called vacuum energy or space energy. And this is generally... it's generally extracted by interactions with of electromagnetic devices with the hypothesized zero-point field. So what do I mean by zero-point field? A zero-point field is an energy field, a potential field that's absolutely huge and exists in all of time and space. And it can be extracted under certain circumstances. We now know from a number of experiments with, for example, magnetic motors where you put magnets on a wheel, spin up the wheel, there's a certain threshold revolutions per minute where the system can be a free-running generator of electricity. So where does the energy come from? Well, it comes from the vacuum of space. It's everywhere. But the trick is to be able to extract it and do it in a way that is reliable. And so Nikola Tesla was onto this 100 years ago. Even before then, Michael Faraday in England, 1837, was onto it. And ever since then, there have been many, many others. I'd say now at least 200 or 300 inventors and other researchers that have developed various forms of the zero-point energy. The problem is that none of these have gotten to an actual practical device that could be used to generate electricity. And the reason for that is that it's relatively easy to prove a concept. It's much more difficult to actually go in the laboratory and make it reliable and demonstrable in a very consistent way. That usually takes a lot of trials, a lot of teamwork, a lot of engineering. So a lot of people get the wrong impression that, well, gee, maybe we can just go down to our local Kmart or Walmart or go down to the local store and buy one of your power packs and you have electricity for free, basically. Well, I think that's going to happen someday, but it's not going to happen right away until we support the research and development of this and we end the suppression, which is a political question then more than it is a question of whether the technology is feasible.
Well, you made a point there that I wanted to expand on was to ensure that these technologies are decentralized. And decentralization, I find, is one of the most important concepts in modern society because, basically, we're heading in the other direction and everything's getting so much worse and worse consistently, isn't it?
Exactly. You got it. That you hit the nail on the head, Vinny. And that's what's going on now is that there's a promotional bias, very strong one, toward bigger and bigger nuclear power plants, bigger nuclear fusion power plants, big fossil fuel power plants. And this is all something that I can't... it's something that... requires grid systems which are getting antiquated and are horribly unsightly, and there's a lot of loss in the lines. It's really a dinosaur system that we have right now, energy system. It's sort of like now in the last 20 years we've had these huge breakthroughs in information technology because we poured a lot of effort into that. We can do the same for energy if we only give it a chance and move beyond a traditional view of things. Now, I was going to get to a couple of the other technologies. There's cold fusion or low-energy nuclear reactions, which is basically a concept that was discovered in 1989 by two University of Utah chemists, Martin Fleischman and Stanley Pones, where they discovered that when you dip the electrodes made of palladium into a solution, a saline heavy water solution, then you could create nuclear reactions on the cathode that then produce a great deal of thermal energy, but in a controlled way, in a non-radioactive way, which is a very promising possibility. And there have been literally dozens and dozens of cold fusion researchers since the discovery. And even though the discovery has been terribly abused by the mainstream media and mainstream scientists whose vested interests are otherwise, it nevertheless is a very promising possibility. And then the other general technology is basically running your car in water, or basically manipulating the water molecule and or the hydrogen atom so that you get excess energy, and it takes less energy to electrolyze the water than you get out of the system when you burn the resultant hydrogen. That's sometimes also called Brown's gas, which is a very interesting concept that is now being developed by many people. So there are a lot of ideas. And
yeah, I have a little Brown's gas generator in my car, actually. You just put two electrodes in the water and hook it up to your ignition on your car, sends the electricity into it, and it separates the molecules. Normally, water is H2O, and it breaks the bond so that it becomes a gas form, HHO, and then it filters up into your carburetor and burns up as gas and fuel.
Exactly. Well said. Well said. And I know an inventor in the U.S. now that is producing a Brown's gas by electromagnetic means, but can be eventually turned into a hydrogen-on-demand system in a car or anything else. These are very promising concepts and ones that have still been cordoned to the underground and denied by the mainstream culture.
Yeah, well,
once again, it's
I have an example of that as well. I mean, I wanted to start up a business doing these things, but I did not possess the technical know-how of how to install these into cars and things of that nature. A friend of mine did, however, and he had a meeting with a couple of very well-experienced mechanics who says, oh, it's quackery, oh, it'll blow up the car engines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's like, nah, Vinny, I'm not going to help you. and it's been running in my car for a long time, and I've had no problems with it whatsoever, and he didn't even research into it further on to that, because Brown's gas doesn't even explode or anything like that in the car engine. It actually burns cool.
Yes, and you can use it for welding too, and that's quite remarkable, because you can weld all kinds of materials together, and yet it's not super hot, just a little outside it. It's amazing.
I know. I saw the videos on YouTube where the guy's got his big welding torch hooked up to it, and he's just basically putting the flames on a piece of metal, and it just turns back into water and starts running down.
I mean, the same problems we have surfacing, you know, any of these alternative technologies, it's the same problem we have trying to bring to the surface any debate, any reasonable debate about, you know, the geopolitical structure at the moment. And so it's either we set up our own communities and just, you know, surpass legislation that way, or we have to take control of the political system ourselves and mold it into what we want to see it I mean, what are your solutions, Brian? How do you see society moving on past this control mechanism we have and their little sellouts in the media?
Well, hopefully what we're seeing is an old dinosaur thrashing and dying, and that we can expect or hope for a much more awakening and alive culture. But in the absence of that, you're right. Then it's time to relocalize, to move into local communities and learn how to be self-sufficient, given what's presently available, and to also perhaps develop the technologies that will really make things work. I mean, right now, our addiction to fossil fuels, our addiction to war, the vested interests of the Wall Street financial empire, the military-industrial complex, and the dirty energy company and the Monsantos of the world. You go down the list of the most powerful entities on the planet, and they're all just outrageously, I can't even think of the right word for it, just abysmally, exploitively, greedily, horrible, and this can't go on anymore. And people need to awaken that this is not okay, and that we need to take action of various kinds.
I believe the word you're looking for is tyrannical.
Tyrannical, you got it.
You know, absolutely. And this is what people don't get, all right? When people engage in political debate and they're talking about, you know, Republicans versus libertarians or whatever, you know, there's a whole spectrum of false political debate out there, and it captures so many people because it's really, really nice. They love to be a part of something, even if it's fake. I don't think that that is a model in any way, shape, or form to establish a community or establish any type of trust in your fellow man, because all you're doing is fighting with each other over false objectives, okay?
So but they have to be real objectives.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, what in the heck could you conceivably accomplish if whatever you're discussing doesn't exist, like a false left-right paradigm, for example?
Sorry, Vinny, to weigh in there, that the public's perception is a false left-right paradigm, but there are real left and right ideals, and there are real philosophies behind what should have been left and right but is now turned into just a, you know, neoliberal, centrist, be-everything-to-everyone nonsense.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Well,
there are definitely right wing ideals. There are definitely left wing ideals, and people should know about those ideals and should pick a side.
Yeah, well, and then the interesting thing is, if you're going to pick a side and you're looking at mainstream politics, the point that you raised there, Will, was they become centrist, and that's exactly what's happened. The left and the right, in an effort to get more votes, and there's a theory on my part, have decided to become, the right has decided to drift a little bit further to the left, and the left has decided to drift a little bit more to the right, and they've met in the middle, so there is now almost no difference between them.
Yeah, because people think the middle ground is somehow understanding of everyone. The middle ground is the most dangerous place to be, in the middle of the road. You know?
Well, I agree. The acceptable range of debate and discussion in politics now is very, very narrow. And so to step outside the box and to introduce new ideas, it's very almost impossible in today's world. So our best hope is to just keep plugging and to keep envisioning a better world, to use some of the new sciences of consciousness, which show that human intention can actually create results in the material world. If we can only become less distracted, if we only go to the effort to gain the knowledge that you need to know to see what the possibilities are, and then to go out and insist that we implement them. It's really a series of steps that almost anybody can do if they so choose, rather than to become like spectators and watching everything on television and their computer, to actually be able to take action, to be able to understand and articulate the context of what it is we need to do before it's too late.
Well, yeah. you've hit the nail on the head there, Brian, is that it's the context that is lost on a lot of people. And it's grand difficulty, and I think it's perseverance, really, on both sides that that's both the source of frustration and also the source of the solution. For example, if we were talking about this when it, with any normal average person on the street, you know, you'd get all these ad hominem arguments, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, oh, you're a libertarian hack, etc. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we're really strong, powerful, creative individuals, and nothing can stop us. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show, your escape from the fabulous tyranny that you live in your fabulous fluoride head states and control by the New World Order, where we have basically a poke of fun at them and just basically take the mickey out of them at their expense, because there's nobody who's got a bigger expense account than the New World Order. Also, welcome very much
Welcome back, and thank you very much to our fabulous guest who's joining us just for this final segment here today, Brian O'Leary. Welcome back, mate.
Well, glad to be back.
Now, Will, you had a question for Brian we were talking about over the break.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always a lot of intrigue over some of NASA's space exploration and also over, you know, the nature of the power establishment in the United States. I mean, can you speak to controversies such as Operation Paperclip and the Nazis that were brought over to start the Department of Energy and the CIA and NASA? And what are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, the history of the U.S. is not what we thought it was. Even I was somewhat brainwashed, I guess you could say, during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, thinking that we were a fairly pure country. And although during the 60s I began to rebel myself and was, in a sense, a reluctant astronaut. And then it was in the years after that I began to really study the history, the just incredible power of the New World Order, the power of the CIA, the fact that these organizations, which were initially established for what appeared to be a good reason, for example, collecting intelligence data, that's very different than going out and now as they're doing, sending drones over and killing civilians, where some guy is in some military guy is sitting in his office in an air-conditioned room in Las Vegas with his joystick bombing people in Pakistan or Afghanistan. All of these things collectively have created a sense of a Goliath-like empire that definitely is beginning to fall, and that's good news. But the way in which it's falling is so disorderly. And so one then wants to look at history at earlier empires and find out what happened there. And, of course, the Roman Empire and the Byzantine Empire and so forth, the English-British Empire. The U.S. Empire is now kind of past its peak. And, yes, there have been these projects that came out of the Cold War, like Operation Paperclip, where some of the Nazi scientists, including Wernher von Braun, were brought over to the U.S. to develop missile programs, for the military, some for what became NASA. But there was some undercover stuff going on, too, that I'm just beginning to learn about. There's just so much history that we can be involved with here.
Did you see much? I mean, what I wanted to talk about specifically was some of the secrecy in the societies that control the United States. I mean, did you see much of a Masonic influence at NASA? And I mean, I also note that you were an advisor to Jesse Jackson.
Even though I was cleared top secret, I did not come into any top secrets while I was briefly in the program. And so I'm not privy to any information. I've not seen anything from the inside. That disappoints people, but I'm afraid that's what's
true. That's not really what I was getting at. I mean, you don't have to be on the inside to see some of the influences going on there. I mean, I know you were an advisor to 33rd degree Mason Jesse Jackson. I mean, I was just wondering, did you see any sort of Masonic influence on NASA during your time there? Just out of interest.
Not that I'm aware of. I'm really confused about the Masonic Order and the degree to which they act as one voice within the context of the New World Order. I really don't know the answer to that. What I have done, I've had a lot of experience in politics and advising politicians. Jesse Jackson, that was very brief. It was I helped him write speeches and advise him on how the aerospace industry, which is now making weapons and planes and bombs and horrible things, could be converted into an industry that could create clean energy sources and infrastructures that are truly sustainable, which I thought was a good thing. I spent a year with Morris Udall, who was an environmental candidate for president in 1975. And that was an interesting experience because nuclear power was a big issue then. But in those days, environmentalism was a lot stronger than it is now. Now it's really watered down, and most of the people that fund the environmental groups are large corporations. It just blows my mind that oil companies, particularly oil companies, are funding many of the largest environmental organizations worldwide.
And then they turn the table the other way.
Yeah. That's the irony of it, isn't it? You know,
it's truly obscene. And you know, if people really analyze these things and look at them, and you don't even need to be a conspiracy theorist. I hate that word, conspiracy theorist, because really the proper word is truth seekers. The people seeking the truth of things really can give us a heads up on what's going on. The truth is such an important concept. The other, of course, is for us to be able to examine what possibilities lie ahead and not be too distracted by all the falderall around us.
I completely agree. Thank you so much, Brian O'Leary, for coming on the show with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did.
Thanks, Mike. And if anybody wants to know more about what I do, my website is brianoleary.com. Brian with an I, and you can see all the stuff that's going on in my world, which is pretty multifaceted.
And the world truly is. All right, there he goes, Brian O'Leary, ladies and gentlemen, from brianoleary.com, and also, incidentally, brianoleary.info. Thank you very much. Hour number two coming up next. Me and Will are going to be breaking down the news of the day and the week. Back in a moment. Divided we fall. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. We are having a, well, I think we just had a really good talk with our guest there, Brian O'Leary. I like that quite immensely. In other news, we're talking about the Christchurch quake, and I kind of wanted to break this puppy down because there's a lot of suspicious circumstances surrounding this quake. A lot. Like you wouldn't believe. Well, you know, like I say, never always shocked, never surprised. I was watching a video earlier today, a lady in Hawaii, I think, and the name of the video is Harp Chart for New Zealand Quake. Evidence of man-made disaster, February 21st, 2011. And she postulates that the Christchurch quake was in fact caused by a HAARP facility, a locally run HAARP facility. And she had a comment on somebody else's video from a person living in Bluff, saying that there were rainbow clouds and stuff like that, and we've seen this phenomenon before. We saw it in the Chile quake. We saw it in the central China quake. And I'm not sure if there was one in the Haiti quake or whatever. That's just speculation on my part. But the difficulty is when you're trying to ascertain these things, like Will said earlier on in the piece, you really, really need that video. Now, I would consider, of course, that we need to kind of take a step back because mainstream media is just reporting on the quake itself and the aftermath, and they're not putting any plug play to any suspicious circumstances leading up to it or anything that's going on at the moment. And somebody questioned what the agenda would be here. John Key, on the day before the quake, had a secret conference, allegedly some description of Bilderberg-esque meeting, discussing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will link up 9 countries, including New Zealand, I believe Chile and Japan and a couple of other nations as well, in a organizational economic partnership, much like what the EU went through before becoming the EU. What they do with the globalist scumbags is they force you into, well, they don't force you into, they very nicely tell you that it's so nice and good for your country to completely sell off all your assets and offshore all your production capabilities and make you subservient to the global economy, which is controlled by evil banksters. And then once you get these trade deals in, your industry goes downhill faster than a trolley shuttle. And I would consider that it's a little bit suspicious, and I'm not saying it's conclusive or anything, but I do find it at least a little bit suspicious that they're having this meeting the day before the quake, or even actually it might have been on the day itself. And John Key himself grew up in Christchurch and then went to go and live in London and New York and all of that kind of stuff, and working for fabulous bankster organizations, as every single president, it seems, or prime minister seems to do. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. And Will, you were talking about some description of facility in the South Island, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's an area that's about a half hour drive out of Christchurch, and it goes by the name Birdlings Flat, and Birdlings Flat, sorry. And it seems to be a harp-like facility there. I mean, there seems to be these, I don't know, triangular-shaped antennae in a grid-like pattern, maybe, I'd say, maybe half an acre. Christchurch, Canterbury University, explains that they use a facility down there, maybe not the entire facility, but part of the facility, to measure ionosphere changes in the atmosphere, to measure changes in ionization of the atmosphere. So, I mean, it looks like the Harp Place in Alaska, a bit smaller. I mean, you know, to a layman like myself, I mean, it looks like a similar structure. Then you go to the university website, and it explains it's measuring exactly what Harp in Alaska is creating, I suppose. It could have a counter purpose. Who knows? Who knows? But it's the other side of the fault line. The fault line doesn't really exist. The other side of this new fault that they're speculating, the other side of the Akaroa Peninsula, probably about 50 k's from Christchurch itself. You know, once again, I mean, nothing's completely... You can't prove this stuff, sadly. There's speculation there. That's why I'd love to see rainbow-colored clouds or something where we can go, whoa, you know, that doesn't happen at this latitude. That's something we can pin down here as ELF or, you know, some atmospheric man-made condition that we can say is completely unrelated to seismic activity. We can't necessarily say the pilot whales beaching themselves was unrelated to seismic activity. There may have been, you know, there's constantly aftershocks. The South Island in normal circumstances has over 1,600 shakes per year, between sort of 1 and 3 on the Richter scale, most of them. So it's really hard to pin it down if you haven't got an atmospheric condition that you can observe and document. Other than that, we've got the 9 congressmen leaving Christchurch 2 hours prior to this happening. That's highly suspicious. But yeah, I mean, coincidences do happen, and this is, so far, this isn't a case like 9/11 where there's like 600 coincidences happening at the same time, all benefiting the same people.
Well, there's certainly a few, though.
But once again, you know, to me,
a few coincidences doesn't nail down anything. Yeah, I agree.
Not quite. But we do know what sort of, I mean, on this side of the debate, knowing what, you know, coming from the perspective we come from, we know what sort of scum runs the place. We're going to be highly suspicious, right? But we need a case that can, you know, you need a case that stands on its own without any of the knowing about the New World Order. For a rock solid case to be rock solid, you need it to stand on its own credentials.
That's absolutely true.
That's the thing.
Mm-mm. I mean, I like speculation because it gets people thinking. But speculation on its own does not stand for itself. Okay, you know, you have to do other things. I mean, well, let's talk about facts though. For example, the trade deal that was being talked about. An article in here from stuff.co.nz. Trade-offs in U.S. trade deal says key. trade-offs, as in layoffs, as in destroying the country's economy and selling out our sovereignty to international banks. Prime Minister John Key has warned that New Zealanders may have to swallow some difficult trade-offs as the price of a trade deal encompassing the United States. His comments were made at the start of a New Zealand-US partnership forum, bringing together New Zealand and US politicians, officials and business people for 2 days in Christchurch. The forum, now into its fourth year, is the backdrop for the release of a major new study in the New Zealand-US relations carried out by Washington think tank, the Centre for Strategic and International Studies, in conjunction with New Zealand Institute of International Affairs. Will, would you be able to actually look those people up and see what the heck they're on about? I'll just pop it into the chat there. The study recommends steps to achieve greater cooperation between the two countries in areas including climate change, creation of a joint centre of excellence for science and technology projects, and as our previous guest would probably say, that these are fabulous joint centres for excellence of science and technology. We'll be just talking about how we can make up the most pathetic crap that you've ever freaking seen so that they can consistently profit off it until the end of conceivable time. Stronger educational and research ties, i.e. stronger indoctrinational and lack of research ties, modifying visa schemes to reduce travel barriers and working together on a nuclear non-proliferation initiatives, i.e. getting rid of the anti-nuclear stance that all New Zealand, well, not all New Zealanders, but the vast majority of New Zealanders still support. And this is an interesting thing. It's a throwback to the days of Don Brash, who's a previous National Party frontman, former governor of the Reserve Bank, incidentally, saying that, well, you know, if I'm elected Prime Minister, the nuclear non-proliferation treaty will be gone by lunchtime. And under a national government that has the power to basically ram through any legislation they see fit within a day in Parliament, you know, just because we've got the majority, let's just abuse parliamentary privilege and just call it an urgency matter and just do it anyway, regardless of any opposition. Or anything.
To answer your question, Vinny, I mean, CSIS, I mean, I've heard varying things about them over the years. I mean, Center for Strategic and International Studies calls themselves a strategy think tank, basically, on bipartisan policy.
Sounds and like a globalist organization to me.
Well, this is exactly what they are. I mean, they're recognized as kind of the legislative equivalent of the Council on Foreign Relations, the sort of non-military inspired equivalent, and all it is, you know, fronting the same ideas that the FTO and the WTO are going to be parroting down their necks, because a lot of them, there's a lot of crossover there, and then there's a lot of different foundations like the Knight Foundation and so on who have a lot to do with CSIS. You know, not a nefarious group officially. You know, once again, if you
The Federal Reserve's not a nefarious group officially.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same thing. It's just a way of breaking down national sovereignty, not just for the United States, but for everyone else involved. And yeah, I'm once again, you know, my solutions are, I'm a nationalist at the same time as being an immigrant. But there you go. I think New Zealand should be concerned with New Zealanders first and foremost, and that we shouldn't be looking at strengthening trade relations when we're always going to have a huge trade deficit due to having no production base here and needing to ship in cars and computers and everything else.
Which we used to be able to do here until the World Bank walked in.
Well, I mean, we had deals with the Japanese where we would produce Toyotas and Nissans and Hondas down here in New Zealand. And we had a Tauranga facility and we had a Nelson facility down in the South Island, and it provided jobs and local contractors got to do the paints and everything else. I mean, partnerships like that can work, which is why, you know, when people talk about public-private partnerships and how everything's being privatized versus having public assets, to me, that's rearranging the, you know, I'm a nationalist. Things haven't been sold out to foreign interests. But at the same time, if you talk public versus private, there's still individuals in the public, in the service, and there's still individuals in the private service. there's still jobs here and jobs there. Sure, there's a lack of accountability in private institutions. Sure, a few million here might go missing here and there, like is what happened with Auckland's rubbish contract going out to an Australian bankrupt company, TPI. There's huge inefficiencies now. Sure. But if you think that having a huge public service and getting rid of all the private contractors will solve New Zealand's problems of $400 million a week of debt, you're absolutely dreaming. You'll get a few million here and a few million there, and it will basically clean up a process, but it'll still you'll still have the same big government evil eugenics process. I mean, you don't get away from that. All you do is clean up the edges a little bit, file the edges up a little bit. You know, the only way we get away is not, I'd say, not focusing on private-public partnerships, and not focusing on privatization versus public, is focusing on a state-owned bank and kicking out the crown and kicking out all these foreign bankers and saying, no, we're not going to be subservient to you. And if that means war, then that means war, you know, but it shouldn't, because they wouldn't want to attract such negative attention to themselves. You see?
Yeah. Well, we may actually, they may actually get pushed into a corner one day is my concern, and just say, all right, the jig is up. Let's do it. Total tyranny. But I think if they ever do try to accomplish something along those lines where they're trying to militarily take over an entire world, I don't think they'll be anywhere near approaching success because, and let's face it, even if they were successful in conquering all the governments of the world and they have a lot of technology that is not open for the public gallery, so to speak, that can be implemented, you know, facilities like HAARP, for example. I mean, it's all very well trying to march an army at another army, but, you know, it's another thing when they can just, you know, whap, flash and destroy whole cities and moments with an artificially cultured earthquake.
Yeah, now, but I mean, we can't put it this way. If New Zealand were to become sovereign in its own right and form a republic, and we said we're not going to have anything to do with, you know, US government military projects in the South Island, for instance, then they wouldn't have the capability to be launching attacks, at least from our own soil. Know what I mean? So you disempower the echelon system here, you disempower XYZ and a lot of their intelligence agents here who have safe grounds, and straight away you lower the threat. But if people think it's risky to go up and set up their own nationalized bank and upset the globalist, how risky is it to go along with them, knowing what psychopaths they are, knowing at any point in time they could decide to cut off liquidity as they did in 2008? You know, they could decide just to cut off liquidity to New Zealand and say, we're not going to lend you that $400 million. And then what happens? And then our government addicted, like a drunken gambler to debt, is just going to fall flat at the table and everyone in the whole country behind them. So that's the risk. We can't go on in this path because the bankers have then got us, you know, by the short and curly, and they're just going to say, hey, we're going to cut off liquidity if you don't do this, if you don't borrow $600 million next year a week. You know?
Yeah. Well, and see, that's the thing. I mean, if you're in the hole, it's like, who was it? Have you ever seen the movie Snatch, Will? It's a Guy Ritchie film, and there was a gangster in it called Bricktop. And one of the sayings in it is, if you're going to deal with them, but just don't end up owing them, because once you're in his debt, you're in his pocket. And once you're in there, you ain't ever getting out. And that's precisely what's happening to all of our nations all around the world. And any nation that basically doesn't buy in to debt, ironic statement that, I guess, basically they get called rogue states.
I mean, this
branded
is
as more, terrorism. And I mean, one thing that's interesting about the John Key-led government is it's like almost word for word propaganda that I'm seeing coming out of Barack H. O'Barry's mouth. And incidentally, US President Barack Obama, I'm just continuing on with the article here, has urged countries negotiating this trade deal to aim for agreement before the APEC forum in Hawaii at the end of the year. So they're going to try and ram it through as quickly as possible so that it's nice and convenient right? And I think that AIPAC is just another one of these pseudo world government type super state organizations that's going to help. Basically, it's going to be a dictatorial management system, essentially. Much like Brussels at the moment in Belgium acts as a dictator to the rest of the EU, and they pass all this legislation and propose things like stopping burying people because it's bad for the environment, and instead we should liquefy them and flush them down the toilets. Things like that, you know.
There's no end to it.
The
drive of any business is to have predictability and stability in a marketplace, and so getting everyone onto APEC or into a European Union is just a way for the powers that be in that region to be able to forecast, you know, 24 months ahead of time and hedge their bets and profit from everyone else's destruction. It's just a way for them to eliminate more and more risk and eliminate any threats and competitions that may rise up, whether they be, you know, technologies, alternative energies, and these are the same things we're talking about here. It's just a way of controlling the marketplace more and more and more, and making the individuals in the marketplace less mobile to respond to, you know, the taxes and the further incursions put on them.
Conveniently, the negotiations have faced a fair amount of criticism from anti-free trade activists. I mean, you know, and just translate free as slave, okay, because that's basically the dichotomy there, so it's slave trade. Academic Jane Kelsey has described the secrecy of these type of things. For example, John Key saying, oh, we need to make all these concessions, but he does not define what those concessions are, and the media is not allowed to attend these meetings and things of that nature, all done behind closed doors. And this goes back to what I was saying before, is that if somebody's doing something benevolent, they do it out in the light, they do it in the public eye, so that you can really see what the heck is going on. If they're doing something evil, if they're doing something sneaky, if they're doing something that's going to sell the freaking country out, they will do it behind closed doors. And my goodness, how many times have the National Party ruling elite in this country negotiated everything behind closed doors? I would hasten to guess that it might even be the majority of their policy is formed behind closed doors. They don't care about the public.
Who cares about the National Party? Who cares about the National Party? This is why, and who cares about Labor? And this is why we need a binding constitution. This is the reason why we don't need democracy. This is the reason why all the idiots who say it's the best system we have are just castrating themselves. You know, this is why we need a binding constitution where public servants are public servants, and everything they do is in a glass box, and everything we do as individuals can be hidden, and it's got nothing to do with them.
But yeah, I mean, the modern political debate is like two slaves. It's like two slaves in chains. One slave turns to the other slave and he says, you know what? This system really sucks. I have to get up really early in the morning. I have to dig ditches all day. I get no money. The place where I live is really crappy, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. And the other slave turns back to him. He says, oh, but it's the best system we've got. Look at what we've accomplished.
Yeah, because they just say focus on all the positives and everything else. I mean, they're not looking for betterment. They're not. That's why they're not human, because they actually don't want to progress.
And ironically, they call themselves progressives. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We're talking about the quake and the incidental free trade deal that was being discussed in secret. About 200 delegates and observers were to attend the two-day forum, but events were off to a slow start after a group of 9 U.S. congressmen were delayed by a congressional vote. U.S. Secretary of State Kirk Campbell also missed the opening. How lucky. How very lucky. Doesn't sound like prior knowledge at all, does it? Meanwhile, the star guest, a senior member of the Barack H. O'Barry cabinet, was forced to cancel altogether. Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano was due to address the forum, but cancelled after a customs officer was shot. The coincidences just keep stacking up here. I would wonder, if there's... This is the very frustrating thing, isn't it? Well, we cannot prove that they knew that it was going to happen. Just have a look at what they did, and then you kind of have to draw your conclusion, and your conclusion doesn't hold any weight because there's no actual admission.
But at the same time, we could be missing the point here. I mean, it's outrageous for me to think that... You know, even if we elect this government, everyone's just like, you can have your choice every few years. You can elect the government and we get the government we deserve. Okay, so here we've got this government we deserve, supposedly. And then here they are meeting with scum like Janet Napolitano and all these other freaks, consulting with them as to how to form our policy here in this country.
Yeah, and get this. The United States has a law called the Logan Act, which forbids any government employee from discussing closed meetings with other foreign power brokers of any kind. That includes diplomats, that includes, prime ministers or prime sinisters in our case, or big heads of major corporations, but they're doing it anyway. Now, we don't even have anything like the Logan Act in this country, so you can just imagine how bad the corruption is here, you know? We talk about this corruption perception index, saying that we're one of the least corrupt countries in the world. You're least corrupt by comparison to what, man? Robert Mugabe? I mean, come on! What are we talking about here? This is ridiculous. It's insane. They're scuttling around like a bunch of frickin' secretive cockroaches. You know, if you see one, there's 100 you didn't see kind of thing. If they pass one law that you didn't like, you probably say that they passed 100 others that you don't like either. And the problem is we don't have a bloody credible media in this country or even report on any of the facts here, you know. I mean, I've been watching the, and this is the interesting thing about living in New Zealand at this particular time, is that both, we've got 4 television channels in this country. 1, 2, 3, and 4. Those are the free-to-air television channels. Channel 1 and Channel 3 have virtually closed everything down. They have interrupted all scheduled programming to have the whole day, all day, every day, nothing but Christchurch quake news. And when I say news, I mean repetition of what they've already said in the morning that goes all the way through till the end. And there's all these press conferences and all this other jazz, you know. We're getting rescue workers in here. And one thing I'd like to actually point out here in the middle of my rant is that I would like to thank so much, and I mean this from the bottom of the cockles of my heart, all the international aid that we've been receiving. We've been getting, me personally, I've been getting a lot of people coming around and saying, oh, Vinny, I hope you're okay and all that. It was like conveniently I'm 1,400 kilometres north of the earthquake zone, so I didn't feel a thing. I was resting safely in my command chair here on the radio when the quake actually happened. Now, this is a good thing, okay? When international people say, holy cow, you're really in trouble, and they send in all these teams and all of that kind of jazz, they're fully self-contained. There's certain teams that are carrying 200 tons of gear, okay? Heavy machinery, the people who are experts in their field. I'd like to thank the international support so much, but one thing that the media fails to say, okay, is that this was predicted. Since the last quake, what was it, 5 months ago, they said that these quakes normally come in twos. That large quakes are often followed by at least one large aftershock that is almost comparable to the aftershock in the first place. And I told people back when the last earthquake happened, here on this radio show, get out of Christchurch. I called up my sister who lives in Christchurch. I told her, get out of there. The economy's not going to recover. There's a possibility of another quake. Get out of there. And now she's without water and without sewage.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, Vinny, I mean, here up here in Auckland, I mean, we're surrounded by volcanoes. I've got a volcano about 10 kilometres away from me here. It's been dormant for 600-700 years. It's set to go, apparently. I'm not moving. You know, I don't. You know, we've got this new world order around us. We should we move to Mars or something where they've got their other obelisks? I mean, I'm not moving. Okay, I'm sick of hearing the news just talk about, you know, what cat died today, what quake happened today, this, that, and the other. I'm sick of it just making spectators out of people, keeping them unthinking idiots, and making them feel like they're humanitarian for caring about someone else less fortunate about them than them, because that makes them feel good. And I'm sick of it. What we need to get back to is get back to basics in this country. Everyone thinks they know that money makes the world go round, okay? I don't think money makes the world go round. I think consciousness does. But for the 5 cents people, okay, money makes the world go round. Well, then ask yourself, where does the money come from? And, you know, and Josiah Stamp, governor of the Bank of England, 1920, said, if you want to be slaves of the banks and pay the cost of your own slavery, then let the banks create the money. Remember, notice how he says, and pay the cost of your own slavery. Beautiful, isn't it? Then let the banks create the money. You know, and that's the central premise for everything else. That's the reason the media sells out, because Jack Tame and Hannah Ockerford and all these other trash, yuppie scum, they just want their 80 grand. They just want their 150 grand. They just want, you know, their Jaguar and their house. You know, so it's a reason for everything. And so then Zeitgeist comes in and says, we just don't have money. You know, like, once again, another false flag. We need to have real money that serves people, not people that serve the banks and their money. It's that simple. And that's got to be the election campaign issue for a real party that's got to stand up in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, they probably won't get elected unless, of course, they're funded by the bankers.
Well, hey, no, I mean, people can fund themselves.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just have no confidence in the system whatsoever. I mean, we just basically need to push the frickin' reset button. Every single institution that exists in our society today, and I don't care whether you're in the US, UK, China, it's all the same. They're all effed. Okay?
But you can't just push the reset button. You can't go from A to Z without huge turmoil and mass death and genocide. You have to work through a series of steps. It has to be done in an orderly fashion. I mean, and this is the problem. We all just want a perfect world tomorrow. It's not going to happen.
Well, exactly. I mean, now going back to the issue that we were discussing, Will.
Or the damn volcano. I don't care about the damn volcano.
No, the Christchurch earthquakes.
I don't care about the damn quake. I mean, seriously, I feel sorry for the people who are dead. I feel sorry for people who die in natural disasters all around the world. I feel sorry for them for the fact that they may have been staged by a government of some sort. You know, but there's nothing we can do about the fact that the earth shook on Tuesday and a bunch of buildings come down on people. There's nothing I can do about it. We need
to
focus on
the elements that the media is not reporting on.
I mean, we can't lift up the rocks off the bodies. We can't save people now. That's in their hands and empower to them. And sorry, and my heart goes out to them. But we've got to deal with what we can deal with, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's get that heart facility in the South Island shut down then, you know, by raising public awareness about it. I mean, that's one of my goals, at least. Now, we got an email in from our station owner, Rush FM in Hamilton, Mr. Roy Harlow, and he's asking us if we want to do a short piece on the discovery of HAARP in New Zealand and carry that out on Facebook, websites, broadcast on Rush FM as news. Do a piece on the engineering capability of a domestic HAARP. Send someone to the location to get new photos to confirm that the story is not a hoax. And send a letter after the photos arrive to the astrophysics department asking why the site, the website for that facility is 9 years out of date. And, of course, follow that up in a few weeks or so to figure out what's actually going on. Now, but keep it in the minds of many as proof that the other HAARPs are the weather problem and ours is a tool in the hands of the USA. And, of course, check out the congressman on the morning of the quake who decided not to go there for some reason. I find that just at least a little bit suspicious. And guess who was in town on the day of the quake? The presence of so-called four, and this is alleged, of course. This is all speculation I'm reading out here. Looking into the presence of four U.S. naval ships that were in the Christchurch area with 1,000-plus personnel, including the HMNZS Canterbury, one of New Zealand's largest ships, and also checking out the 170 pilot whales that died the day before. And supposedly submarines can beach whales due to sonar interferences. And what naval subs are unaccounted for or last known in the Pacific Rim? How many days away and how many days ago? Now, see, these are important questions as far as I'm concerned, far more important than the average reporter question, which is, oh, was it shocking when the quake hit?
Oh, for sure. I mean, if something can actually be pinned down, and we could say to New Zealand, okay, here's documented evidence for this being a staged attack. Well, I mean, it would kill a lot of confidence in the system, sure, and that would be great. Yeah, but
nobody else in this country is going to do it. Well, I mean,
But with speculation, rather than forming constructive thought, what you form more is criticism. And people saying, oh, conspiracy nuts, this, that, and the other. And so it has to be a rock-solid case. And, look, we're just emerging out of it. We're not even at the weak mark. Information will come out. And some people are also going to know of some of the conspiratorial elements, and they're going to fuel them and feed them with disinfo. And, you know, so it goes.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'd like to do is actually make a call out to our Kiwi listeners that are down there in Christchurch. If you want to send us information to read out on the show, we will do it for you. And also, if anybody can send us in photos of that HAARP facility, go for it, because you know this is the only media outlet in this country that's really telling the truth to any extent. Basically, you know, support us, because we're going to support you, and we consistently have the whole time we've been on air. We've been standing up for freedom. We've been standing up for the people of New Zealand and the people of the world. We've been putting the boot into the New World Order scum filth mongers that decided that long ago that the world is their freaking oyster and it's their job to harvest it like we're a bloody sheath of wheat being cut off at the knees and stripped and processed and turned into freaking powder to fertilize their lawn. You know?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, as incidentally happened to a lot of Jewish bones during the concentration camps, they actually ground up all the bones and used them as fertilizer. What an efficient German use of extermination.
Yeah, and made lampshades out of their other body parts, and yeah.
Yeah, no, stuffed couches and chairs with the hair and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, just imagine the most ruthless, tyrannical, evil scumbags that you could ever conceive of, you know, worse than any movie character or James Bond villain, and that is not even coming close to the true nature of the scum that run this planet. Okay? Know who you're dealing with here, all right? You know, we don't come on this radio show lightly. You know, we face criticism every single day, don't we, Will? And it takes perseverance, and something that a lot of people have seemed to have forgotten about in this modern age is a human spirit that will not bow down and will keep fighting. Even if we lose, we'd rather die on our feet than die on our knees. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show for today. After this, I will be appearing on the Intel Hub next hour. I have no idea where exactly you listen to the Intel Hub these days. I believe it's on Oracle Broadcasting. And then after I've done an hour on that, I have an hour break. And then I am going to be right back here on American Freedom Radio from, I think it's 9 till 11 Central. I'll be joining Freeman on his show for the full 2 hours. So it's a Vinnie extravaganza today. And after this, after I've done with that, then I'm going to have to go out and film a frickin' dance party. So, hey, it's all go, and I love it. man, I am really, really sick to death of so many things that, you know, almost can't even put my finger on it. You know what I'm saying? Well, I mean, it's just like if somebody were to ask you, hey, Vinny, what's got your goat these days? What really grinds your gears? And it's just like, well, honestly, I can't give you a single definite answer other than saying everything. And it's not like I'm really upset or flying off the handle or anything along those lines. It's just the fact that everything is so screwed up. You know what's really screwed up is that I can't turn on my tap and have fresh, clean, non-poisoned with fluoride water coming out. I can't sit in my car without worrying how badly the next gas price hike is going to affect me. I can't go out and buy something to eat because when they pass me the receipt and I touch the bloody printing on it, it's got BPA in it, which will make me freaking sterile and or effeminate. You know, it's a full spectrum F up. Come on. Drives me,
and that's why, Vinny, and that's why I'm sick of these mindless buffoons arguing over, oh, who gets more, the public or the private or this or the that, or you know what I mean? You know what I mean? When has Bomber Bradbury put up an article saying anything about the health concerns and the 50% fertility rate of men compared to 30 years ago in this country? I mean, when have any of these political activists given a damn about aspartame or fluoride or mercury or the bankers, the banking system or anything, you know what I mean? All they do is like play musical chairs every day, and we're going to rearrange a chair, and John can have a blue chair and we don't like him, and you know, Phil Goff's good, he's got a red chair, and I'm just sick of all these just bumbling idiots, you know what I mean? We need to take the system back ourselves. New Zealanders need to take their country back.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking decentralization and we're talking personal responsibility. I mean, if we were going to have any description of power grid, and as is evident from the Christchurch quake, having a centralized power grid is not a good idea, because in the sense of any description of emergency, the whole grid goes down. That means everybody's effed. All right. What I think would be a much better idea for any description of power generation is individual power generators that everybody has on their home. Okay?
I think it doesn't matter what happens
to the whole grid. I mean, exactly. You're right, Will. New Zealand is small enough to do this.
I was just going to say New Zealand is small enough to have centralized government, because we've only got 4 million people at this point, and to have it accountable, you know, to have a central government, but to have it fully, completely accountable. That doesn't mean that you couldn't have, you know, some armed forces or intelligence, you know, experts to guard what you're trying to do, as long as what you're trying to do is really a public service, is really in the best interests of individuals, not a collectivist model that compromises every single individual.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the word collectivism, because that's exactly what John Key, a right-winger supposedly, was praising as one of the good reasons to have a Trans-Pacific Partnership.
That's why I say he's not a right-winger. I mean, it's... Mm. Of course he's not. And then, you know, that's what I mean. And then Bradbury, you know, the biggest voice on the left, gets up and goes the right wing and the really, really, really right wing, as if somehow National and ACT are like, you know, complete white supremacists or something or other. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like John Key, but he's not white pride worldwide. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. That stupid idiot Bomber should shut his mouth if he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he should put up and challenge someone like myself to a debate, you know, because I'm all for free speech, but don't talk crap and lead people down the garden path. I'm sick of people on the left, on the right, and everywhere. I'm sick of them co-opting people's minds, putting their blinkers on like some sort of retarded racehorse, and just steering people into walls, you know. It's evil.
Retarded. Well, see, you know, and you're absolutely right. Well, and, you know, this is the thing about free speech. There should be no restrictions on it, I agree. But, this is the difficulty. We need to have free debate coupled with free speech. You know what the difficulty is with free speech? Is that if somebody chooses not to challenge you on a lie that you've said, that means that the free speech of everybody is really threatened, particularly if you're against it. You know, like climate changes, for example, you know, they don't talk about anything outside of bogus solutions that won't ever really make any frickin' difference in this world whatsoever. Okay, and they won't allow any debate on the subject. Now, I'm all for them letting them have their say, like, oh, we need to kill all the children because they're bad for the environment. We need to make them commit suicide after 3 years old because they'll have worn out their carbon allowance by then. You know, I'm all for that. Just so long as somebody says, oi, you're an exterminating scumbag and you're wrong. And here's why you're wrong. Okay?
That's freedom of speech. If they have the freedom to say 350.org and we've got all these celebrities, Keisha Castle Hughes, and we're so soft and loving and liberal and we just want to kill everyone and then try and help Africa at the same time, you know, then I've got the right. I've got the right to call them a bunch of soft twits. Because they are. I mean, like, they don't debate any facts, and at the end of the day, when you corner them, they're just like, oh, does that mean you want to throw rappers all down the street and just pollute everything? Like, totally inane arguments.
Saying that you're an oil-funded right-wing stooge when it's actually the other way around. Have a look at all the oil companies that are funding all these climate cultist movements, for F's sake. You know, it's ridiculous. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. You can check out the archives of the show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. In fact, if you go to your web browser and just type in Vinnie Eastwood, it comes up automatically now. So that's pretty awesome. Anyway, thanks very much, Will. This has been a good show, eh?
Yeah, and to all those who say this isn't the proper venue for such discussion, we'll stuff you. This is the venue right here, and we can take it back. We can take this country back.
Exactly. The venue for their proper discussion is 6 feet under the ground, buried in a cask of wood. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be back tomorrow.